Welcome back to the deep dive. So what if the center of a black hole, like the most destructive, inescapable dead end in the entire known universe, is actually just, well, a human math error?
I mean, it's a completely staggering thought, right? Because we've spent nearly a century assuming that at the core of a black hole, the laws of physics just, you know, break down. They collapse into this point of infinite density, a true singularity.
Right, nature's ultimate game over screen. But today, we're diving into a highly theoretical and honestly fascinating markdown file titled AA0.MD. It makes a really compelling case that the singularity isn't a physical reality at all.
Yeah, it argues it's an illusion.
Exactly. An artificial wall created by the really rigid elementary way we've all been taught to multiply numbers. So the mission for this deep dive is to explore something called the axiom calculus, which is this radical mathematical framework that completely rewrites the fundamental rules of multiplication.
And we aren't just going to, you know, leave this in the realm of abstract algebra either. The source material takes this non-commutative framework to a really rigorous physical conclusion.
Yeah, by the time we're done here, we are going to look at how a super intelligent AI, using something the text calls conditional collapse theory, is actively being designed to adaptively hunt for the echoes of Hawking radiation out in deep space.
Which is wild.
It is. And its ultimate goal is to prove that black holes don't collapse into nothingness. They actually bounce, leaving behind a tiny, finite, Planck-scale remnant. Let's unpack this. Where do we even start with a concept that claims our basic math is responsible for breaking physics?
Well, we start with the concept of mathematical evolution, because the source introduces this idea of the parabolic progression of mathematics. If you look at the history of human math, it doesn't evolve in a smooth, straight line.
Right.
We build a system, we use it to describe the world, and eventually we hit an equation that simply cannot be solved within that system. It's a mathematical dead end.
Like the progression from integers to fractions to real numbers, the source has this great table. Like the equation x plus 1 equals 0, you can't solve that with just positive counting numbers.
Exactly. You need negative numbers for that.
Right. And 2x equals 1. That required us to invent fractions. Or x squared equals 2, requiring irrational numbers. Every time we hit an unsolvable problem, we just had to invent a completely new domain of numbers to give the equation somewhere to go.
Yeah, and the ultimate historical wall was the equation x squared equals negative 1.
Oh, right.
Because in the realm of real numbers, that's just a dead end. You cannot multiply a number by itself and get a negative result. The volume of that problem didn't exist in our mathematical architecture, so we invented imaginary numbers, the complex number system, to give it the space to be solved.
Which brings us to the central, like incredibly provocative premise of A0.MD. The text asks, and this is wild, what if there is a problem, a specific geometric collapse that equals zero in our current real and complex number systems, but becomes entirely solvable? Totally non-zero if we step up into a completely different kind of mathematical engine.
It's a total paradigm shift. I mean, we're so used to treating our current mathematical framework as absolute truth rather than just, you know, the language we currently happen to speak.
It totally makes me think of trying to run a modern volumetric 3D video game on a 1980s 2D console engine.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because you can look at the 2D code all day, but the z-axis, the depth, it literally does not exist in that system. You can't just tweak a few lines of code. You have to fundamentally upgrade the engine itself.
Right, exactly.
But I do have to push back on the text here for a second, because I remember enough from advanced algebra to know about the fundamental theorem of algebra. The complex number system is algebraically closed, meaning every polynomial equation already has a root within that system. We basically finished the game. We unlocked all the numbers. So how can the source possibly propose upgrading past a system that is mathematically proven to be a closed loop?
Well, that is precisely the right challenge to bring up, and the source actually addresses it head on. You are absolutely correct that complex numbers are algebraically closed. We aren't going to invent a new number to escape the system the way we invented the imaginary number I.
Okay, so what are we doing then?
Well, and this is the critical distinction. The complex number system is only closed for commutative math.
Commutative, meaning the order of operations doesn't matter. A times B is always perfectly equal to B times A.
Exactly. Our entire classical physics architecture, including Einstein's general relativity, is built on commutative mathematics. But the source proposes we move into a non-commutative algebra, something it calls axiom space.
Axiom space.
Yeah. In axiom space, the fundamental rules of interaction change. The order in which you multiply things actively dictates the reality of the outcome. A times B might equal something completely different from B times A.
So we aren't inventing new numbers. We are inventing a completely new syntax for how symbols interact with one another.
This raises an important question. If we change the rules so that the order of multiplication matters, how does that affect the structural architecture of the universe? Specifically, how does it affect matrices?
Yeah, we really need to ground this, because matrices are basically the heavy lifters of physics. They aren't just grids of numbers. They are the engines that calculate transformations, multidimensional space, and gravity.
Right.
And in classical math, every matrix has a property called a determinant. The source text zeroes in on this. If a matrix determinant equals zero, it means the mathematical volume of whatever that matrix represents has completely collapsed. It's flattened. You can't invert it. It is a fatal mathematical dead end.
Yes, a zero determinant means the semantic volume is just gone. If that matrix represents a physical space, that space is crushed down to a single point. But in non-commutative math, the very definition of a determinant has to change.
Because the order matters now.
Exactly. Because the order of multiplication matters, the standard diagonal cross multiplication formula you learn in linear algebra just falls apart. You have to use a much more complex formulation called the Dudonnet determinant.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the source breaks down the mechanics of this Dudonnet determinant with a highly specific 2x2 matrix. It populates this matrix with two foundational operators from its axiom calculus. The first is an axiom of rotation, denoted by a script R, and the second is an axiom of negation, denoted by a script N.
Now let's look at how classical math handles this. If you calculate the classical determinant of this matrix, the cross multiplication gives you a really simple formula R squared minus N squared.
Right. And if we assign both of those symbols a standard value of 1, the equation is literally just 1 minus 1. The determinant is exactly 0. The geometric volume collapses, and the matrix is functionally dead.
But watch how axiom space mathematically rescues the matrix here. The source stipulates that R and N are not static numbers. They are non-commutative operators. Specifically, they anti-commute.
Meaning R times N is the exact mathematical opposite of N times R.
Hmm.
In algebraic terms, R times N equals negative N times R.
Precisely. Now, we apply the non-commutative Dudonnet formula to that exact same matrix.
Okay.
The formula looks like this R squared minus R times N times R inverse times N. Because order matters, we can't just arbitrarily combine the N's in the R.
Oh, you can't just smush them together.
Exactly. But because they anti-commute, when we strategically shift the order of the operators to group them, the anti-commutation rule forces a negative sign to literally pop out of the equation.
Wait, and a negative times a negative is a positive, so the subtraction mathematically flips into an addition.
Exactly. The formula evolves from R squared minus N squared into R squared plus N squared.
Oh, wow. So if we give them that same value of 1, it's no longer 1 minus 1 equals 0. It becomes 1 plus 1 equals 2. The determinant is firmly non-zero.
The matrix is completely invertible now. The dead end is gone, and the mathematical volume is completely preserved.
I really want to make sure we conceptualize what just happened. Because, I mean, on paper, it looks like an abstract parlor trick. But geometrically, this is profound. I was trying to think about how to visualize this volume rescue for you listening. Think of a 3D cardboard box.
Okay, a box.
Yeah. In classical commutative math, if you crush that box, the sides fold in on each other perfectly. The internal volume drops to absolute zero. It's flat. But if the hinges of that box operate on non-commutative rules, meaning the order in which the sides interact physically matters, then trying to crush the box flat actually causes the hinges to twist against each other.
Oh, I like this.
Right. The very act of collapsing it forces the structure to pop out into a new geometric configuration. It simply refuses to have zero volume.
That's a brilliant way to conceptualize it. The mathematical architecture inherently resists total collapse. And the reason det A0.MD spends so much time obsessing over preserving the volume of a matrix is because in physics, gravity itself is governed by 1.
Right. Einstein's general relativity, the metric tensor.
Exactly. Space-time isn't just an empty void. It's mathematically described by a matrix called the Schwarzschild metric. And this metric tensor dictates the curvature of space and the flow of time around a mass.
Okay.
If you calculate the classical determinant of the metric tensor for the exact center of a black hole, where the radial distance r equals 0, the standard formula is negative r to the 4th power times sine squared theta.
And there's the fatal flaw right there. If r is 0, then 0 to the 4th power is 0. The entire equation zeros out. The determinant of spacetime itself equals 0.
Which means the physical volume of spacetime mathematically vanishes. You get infinite density, you get a complete breakdown of causal structure, you get a singularity.
It's essentially nature's blue screen of death. Like dividing by 0 on a calculator and just getting that error screen. A zero-volume matrix collapsing makes intuitive sense when we talk about a singularity.
Yeah.
But how does this non-commutative rescue mission actually apply to the physical crush of a black hole? Because the universe doesn't live on paper. How does simply reordering multiplication create physical volume out of literally nothing?
Well, the source argues that the immense, unimaginable density at the center of a black hole fundamentally changes the nature of space-time coordinates. Time, radial distance, and angular direction, they stop acting like fixed commutative numbers. The extreme pressure forces them to become dynamic, non-commutative operators, governed by an internal axiom of rotation.
So it forces the very fabric of space into axiom space.
Yes. And to quantify this, the text introduces a specific parameter h bar subscript a. This parameter represents the fundamental scale of that non-commutativity. It's basically the physical thickness of the new rules.
And this is the exact moment the singularity is officially deleted from existence.
Yes, it is.
Because when you calculate the Dieudonné determinant of the black hole using these new non-commutative operators, that fatal classical formula changes entirely. It transforms from negative r to the fourth sine squared theta into a new non-commutative determinant t squared times h bar subscript, a squared times theta squared.
And notice what's missing from that new formula. The radial distance r doesn't dictate the baseline anymore.
Right.
Instead, the baseline is determined by h bar subscript a. Because HR subscript A is a fundamental quantum parameter, meaning it is strictly greater than zero, that formula can never, under any circumstances, equal zero.
So the determinant remains non-zero. The semantic volume of space-time is preserved.
Exactly. Black hole doesn't collapse to a point of infinite density. It crushes inward, hits the non-commutative limit governed by HBAR subscript A, and it bounces. It settles into what the text calls a Planck scale remnant.
Something unimaginably tiny. The text estimates about 0.1 Planck lengths, but crucially, undeniably finite. It has actual volume. The mathematical probability of a true singularity actually existing in our universe drops to exactly zero.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the mathematics are incredibly elegant. Resolving infinite curvature on a chalkboard is a massive theoretical victory, but physics demands observable proof.
Yeah, you can't just have glowing math equations floating in space.
Right. If this remnant truly exists, if every black hole hides a tiny, finite, non-commutative core instead of an infinitely deep pit, how do we actually prove it?
Because we can't exactly fly a probe past the event horizon to check if the center has volume. So how does a mathematical workaround change what a telescope actually sees?
It changes the boundary conditions of Hawking radiation.
Okay, how so?
Well, in classical physics, a black hole evaporates over billions of years by emitting perfectly thermal, totally random radiation. And when it finally finishes evaporating, it's just gone. Nothing remains. But if axiom space is real, the presence of that finite remnant fundamentally alters that evaporation process, creating three distinct observable signatures.
And rather than just being three random anomalies, the source links them together causally. I mean, think about the evaporation process. If the black hole is shrinking and it hits this incredibly dense non-commutative remnant, the evaporation can't just proceed to zero. It hits a physical wall.
Right. It can't vanish.
And that sudden halt in the evaporation process produces the first signature, a final detectable gamma-ray burst of low-energy quanta.
Exactly. The remnant acts as a break. And because the remnant survives the evaporation, it continues to hold on to physical information that classical physics assumes is just destroyed. This creates the second signature, an entropy deficit.
Yeah, the text actually calculates this. For an h-bar subscript, a parameter of 0.1, the AI calculates a missing entropy value of approximately 15.7. It's a highly quantifiable measure of the information locked away in the remnant.
But the true smoking gun-like, the signature that requires an entirely new approach to astrophysics, is the presence of quantum correlations in the Hawking radiation itself. Mathematically, it's written as G2 of omega, negative omega does not equal 1.
Let's visualize how this correlation actually forms, because the math gets incredibly dense here. Think of dropping a stone down a totally bottomless pit. The sound waves travel down forever. There is no echo.
Right.
That's your classical infinite singularity. The radiation coming out of the black hole is random, with no internal structure. But if that pit has a bottom, even a microscopic, incredibly jagged floor, the sound waves eventually hit it and bounce back up. As they travel back, they collide and interfere with the new waves still traveling down. A sophisticated sonar system could read that interference pattern and absolutely prove the existence of a floor without ever having to actually see it.
That is a phenomenal analogy. The high-frequency quantum waves inside the black hole bounce off the reflective surface of the Planck scale remnant. This creates a hidden, structured pattern in the radiation that eventually escapes.
Right.
And that sonar system you mentioned, that is exactly what the source proposes with conditional collapse theory, or CCT. It outlines the pseudocode for a superintelligent AI designed specifically to hunt for these exact interference patterns.
I really want to dig deeply into how this AI operates, because it's not just passively recording data. The text describes it as an adaptive detector.
Yeah.
Because in deep space observation, computational power and energy are finite resources. You can't just measure every particle across every frequency.
No, it would take forever.
Exactly. So the AI utilizes Bayesian logic, constantly calculating something called the collapse potential per work unit, represented as delta H over W.
It's essentially an economic optimization. The AI is constantly asking itself, what specific frequency measurement will give me the highest probability of confirming the remnant for the lowest computational cost?
Right, because measuring standard thermal radiation is cheap, but it gives you zero structural information.
Exactly. And attempting to measure microscopic deviations at incredibly high frequencies is extremely expensive, and the signal-to-noise ratio is terrible.
So the AI targets the acoustic sweet spot, the quantum correlations, and the text provides a numerical simulation of this hunt. It shows how the AI tests specific frequencies, denoted by the symbol omega. When the AI looks at low frequencies, where omega is less than 1, it finds a massive correlation score of greater than 2.
And we need to explain why that specific frequency range matters. Low frequencies correspond to longer wavelengths. These long quantum waves reflect relatively cleanly off the entire overall structure of the non-commutative remnant.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and that creates a very strong, highly readable interference pattern. It's a loud, undeniable echo.
But the simulation shows that as the AI tests higher frequencies, that correlation seriously degrades. By the time it targets a frequency of omega equals 20, the score drops to 0.622. It actually becomes an anti-correlation.
Which perfectly aligns with the physics of axiom space. High frequencies mean very short wavelengths. Those short waves are small enough to interact with the granular, chaotic, non-commutative geometry of the remnant itself. They don't bounce cleanly. They scatter.
Right.
The interference becomes destructive, leading to that anti-correlation score.
The logic is just so beautifully optimized. By analyzing the expected information gain against the energy cost, the AI knows exactly where to look. The text claims that with just one solid low-frequency correlation measurement, the Bayesian updating is so powerful that the AI leaps from a baseline 50-50 guess to being 91% confident that the singularity is resolved and the remnant exists.
It's incredible.
Just one precise measurement of an echo to prove that the universe utilizes non-commutative math at the absolute bottom of a black hole.
It's a breathtaking convergence, really. It takes abstract non-commutative algebra, uses it to completely rewrite the metric tensor of general relativity, and provides observational astrophysics with a highly optimized testable algorithm to prove it all.
So what does this all mean? If we track the entire journey we've just been on, we started with a historical reality that human mathematics only evolves when it is forced to overcome a dead end. We looked at axiom space, realizing that simply allowing the order of operations to matter anti-commutation can mathematically save a zero-volume matrix from collapsing.
Which gave us the mathematical mechanism to address the ultimate physical dead end. By applying that non-commutative framework to the crushing gravity of a black hole, the zero-volume singularity is deleted from existence, entirely replaced by a finite, bouncing, Planck-scale remnant.
And finally, we saw how a highly optimized AI, acting like a quantum sonar, could hunt for the exact interference patterns in Hawking radiation to prove to the entire world that this remnant is really there.
What's fascinating here is the underlying philosophical shift. It forces us to entirely reevaluate the relationship between mathematics and physical reality.
Yeah.
Are the deepest, most insurmountable mysteries in physics actual physical barriers, or are they simply artifacts of the rigid, commutative language we have chosen to use? We hit a wall, and we assume the universe is broken. But in reality, it might just be our assumptions that need to be upgraded.
It makes you wonder how many error screens we're staring at simply because we refuse to install a new engine, which leaves you with a truly profound question to ponder. If a black hole singularity is just an illusion created by the rigid, commutative way we process mathematics, what other impossible walls or dead ends in your own life, your work, or your beliefs are actually completely solvable if you just change the fundamental axioms you use to evaluate them?
That is a great question.
Thank you so much for taking this journey into the axiom calculus with us today. It's been a truly mind-expanding deep dive, and we couldn't be more thrilled to share it with you. Keep questioning those fundamental axioms, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.